Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Engine. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Nicole Am.
Hello.
Cole Hornaday.
Hi there.
And, of course, Chris Casso.
Hello.
How is everybody on this cold evening here in Seattle?
Not too cold in here right now.
Oh, it's rather nice and toasty in here.
It was cold getting here.
Yeah, sorry.
It made me agitated. And you know how I am when I'm agitated.
The Grumposaurus Rex.
The Grumposaurus Rex.
Dethawing.
Bellowing.
If you hear a low growling noise, that is Cole's anger rising slowly.
Don't worry,
the
though. The Ice Age is going to take care of him.
That's right. It'll cool him down. Yeah. Everything will be fine.
It's funny because the last time we were here and recording, we had a thunderstorm outside during the show, and now it's snowing outside. Yeah. So who knew that Seattle had so much weather?
Next stage, locusts.
All the climates.
Yeah. All right.
I think there was something going around.
I'm looking forward to the rain of blood myself.
Yes.
on Facebook, where someone said, like, who knew that Seattle could have all four seasons in one day?
Yeah, we kind of have.
Life in the convergent zone.
That's right.
Well, we got a packed show tonight, friend, so let's get going. First off, let's talk about what's coming up here at Comics Dungeon.
So this is kind of a two-part thing. We did have it's still going on as of this time, I think.
Yeah, we have a couple days left.
It's a couple days left. The, Black Panther, school donation fundraiser we're doing. And, we're trying to send, over 100 kids from Denny Middle School to go see the movie. And, we just had, Cairo 7 do a quick, recording about it. And we've gotten a ton of donations.
Yes.
And
that's
so
awesome.
we've breezed past the initial goal, and we're able to latch on some additional stuff because of that.
Yep.
And also because of the popularity of Black Panther, Nicole is setting up a special event, which is...
And it's an extension of our book club, except it's a lot more looser, where we're just going to meet up and drink coffee and eat snacks and talk about the Black Panther movie and then the comics around it and just share and celebrate our excitement for it. Mm-hmm. And that'll be Saturday, March 10th from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. So it'll actually be after hours.
Ooh.
Yes. But that means that spoilers as much as you want. And you don't have to worry about anybody being in the store. So it should be super fun.
Right. Rock on. And if you've seen the movie Black Panther, or if you've read the comics, here's a plug for next week. We're going to be talking a lot about Black Panther next week, so tune in.
So much.
Next week. Hey, friends, Emerald City Comic Con is coming up this weekend. Oh my God, it's already here.
Yeah.
Are we excited? I mean,
I didn't realize it's coming up so soon. I just ignore all the splurge of emails anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I think Chris...
I am not their target audience. I really am not.
Chris and I are having busy schedules in general, and then like the con is coming up, and that's a busy schedule in and of itself. So it's like, oh, okay, let's do this thing.
Yeah. So who gets to hold down the fort this time?
Me.
Again.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not completely, though.
It just seemed like 2 months ago you were holding down the fort. And
wow.
It's my fort.
Yeah.
we reorganized the shows to be more fort-like. but yeah, no, it's I have an easier time not dealing with a billion humans, and
Love dealing with billions and billions of humans.
Yeah. That's just so weird about you.
No,
I know.
Totally
I just love like chaos and swarms and stuff.
I know. It's just
I don't know.
But so we're prepping for it. We're going to be doing lots of packing and yes, lots of scheduling. So
do you know where in the convention you're going to be?
Oh darn, it is on the map. So if you go to the Emerald City Comic Con website, you'll see it. Do you remember the booth number offhand?
I neglected to look that up.
All right, dear.
Go to emeraldcitycomiccon.com or whatever their email address is and look for Comics Dungeon on their map.
And I will post it too.
And you'll post it on your website and on your Facebook, I'm sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to be there on Friday. I got a ticket into the show because I'm part of the Rocket Men, which is a web series about a squad of Rocket Men.
Cool
and
beans.
We recently picked up, we teamed with a local organization called Zombie Orpheus. I think I can say that now. And so we're going, there's some Rocket Men that are going to be wandering around Emerald City Comic Con over the weekend, handing out flyers, promoting the show. So I will probably see you on Friday.
That's awesome.
And I'm excited because I've never been to Emerald City Comic Con before.
No, I thought you did. Oh, okay.
No, I've been to PAX, but I only got in because I was helping out at a booth. And I got to meet Will Wheaton. That was pretty cool.
Nice.
All right, so Cole, you got some things to say, don't you?
I do. I have some very exciting and happy things to say. So first of all, you may recall one of our more popular episodes was our convergence of all things Manos, Hands of Fate. And one of the things we talked about was the sequel that Jackie Naaman Jones, daughter of the original Manos, and the original Little Debbie in the original film, and our dear friend Rachel Jackson and Tanya Tomek all got together to produce a sequel called Manos Returns. And on Friday, May 4th, 9 p.m. at Crypticon, they will be holding the world premiere screening of Manos Returns. So I've never been to Crypticon. I would really like to go see that. I'm going to try and make an effort. I did kickstart the film, so I do get my own DVD, but I think this is something I would enjoy a lot more in a public arena. Also, if you may recall, last quarter at North Seattle College Continuing Education, we launched our comic book illustration class taught by Andrew Steers, and it was actually quite successful. We had room in the class for 20 people, and we had 15 or 16 sign up. So nice. For a new class, first past the post, that's pretty darn good.
Cool.
So, for the last couple of quarters, I've been pestering our, again, dear friend, Tatiana Gill, to teach a class aimed at her areas of interest, I talked her into it, basically. So Tatiana is now going to be teaching a class called Draw Your Story, Find Your Voice Through Comics. And this is going to be aimed at cartooning for female creators, and their efforts to explore, and she's going to guide people in exploring biographical stories, women's issues, body positivity, but also create a space that's open for LGBTQ+ members of the community. Registration is now open. The class starts May 3rd and runs till June 7th. It's $109 for 6 sessions. You can go register for the class online at learnatnorth.org. And also, we're offering Andrew's class, Comic Book Illustration, again. So if you were at the Panel Jumper live show, I made no qualms about talking about my New World Order I'm planning for North Seattle College Continuing Education. And we're going to wipe out all those bloody ceramics classes with comic book themed courses. Personal enrichment! So I'm very excited about that.
All right.
And I will continue to plug this, and I'll probably pester Chris about putting the notice on the Comics Dungeon rant as well, so we can help spread the word.
All right. So if you're interested in drawing your own story, look up at North Seattle College.
Death to ceramics.
Death to ceramics!
The growling reached a crescendo just now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you only knew the misery of managing those ceramics classes.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
These people are fanatics.
Oh, my goodness.
And I hope they hear me say that.
I don't know, ceramics. It's just that's the image I get when I think of like adults in community college that's just taking ceramics classes. Nicole, you got some fresh breaking news, don't you?
I do. I use the internet to find out information.
I want to bitch about ceramics some more.
Our booth number is 2110. So that's where you can find us. We will have thousands of comics for $2. We'll have lots of family friendly comics and kids comics.
And you could sign up for our anti-ceramic podcast.
That's right. We'll be starting that after the con.
We're going to call it Ceramattack.
Ceramattack.
All right. So booth 2110. All right. Thank you, Nicole.
Yep.
All right. Now for a little bit of fresh news.
That's a cathartic laugh there, guys.
Late breaking news that I just heard before we started rolling today. And that's that Marvel is relaunching again.
Yeah.
What's the story behind that?
So they're calling it Marvel Refresh. Which,
or Fresh Start.
Fresh
right?
Start.
Yes.
Sorry.
In rebirth.
Yeah, I'm so used to it. Yeah.
Marvel Tide Pod.
Yeah.
It's a Marvel ad.
If only we could just have them poison themselves.
Jeez.
All right. Yeah,
so.
Yeah, no. We Nicole and I
Malicious.
Both had like a seizure when we found out.
Oh, my
screaming.
Goodness.
There was screaming in my car.
Yeah. So
night.
It sounds like they understand they need to start fresh. Although this sounds like an admission of guilt, but They're going to be taking a bunch of the titles that they restarted the numbers on and went back to the legacy numbers. Yep. Like Avengers went to like 675. And they're going to go back to Avengers number one again. They're not going to do it with all the titles, and they haven't announced everything. But so far, Avengers number one has been offered and Venom number one has been offered. And it's just like, but you just refreshed already.
Well, and they were kind of picking and choosing on some things anyway, and even the numbers are seemingly maybe not accurate, and now it was confusing. It's like you go from Black Panther 18 to like 162 or something. It's like, did I miss an issue?
They better not go back to Black Panther number one.
Yeah,
you know, but they're gonna feel the temptation to. And Tom Brevoort said in an interview, it's just like, well, we were thinking of like maybe maintaining legacy numbers, but we wanted to make this as unconfusing as possible. And it's just like, no. That's not what you're doing right now.
Making it worse.
When was this all announced?
I think I mentioned it to you yesterday, Nicole. So I think it made its way to retailers fairly early. And I was like, oh, do we have to keep this under wraps? But I saw it break out on like Comics Beat and they started going on. And not Publishers Weekly, but like IGN. I think IGN started talking about it and they posted the pictures of it. So all within the last 2 days.
Yeah, it's pretty much by the posting of this will be almost a week.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Not good news.
When this was first mentioned at the table before we started rolling, Cole had his head in his hands because of the news.
Yeah. It's one of those things of there's a possibility they're going to be doing all new creative teams and they have to get that situated anyway with Bendis leaving Marvel. Mm-hmm. But the whole renumbering is where it's just a mess.
Yeah.
Well, I just got done reading the article, I think, that you had posted in the rant this last week about sort of the retailer's review of the year and distribution and all that stuff. And they had conveniently broken things up into chunks that I could read in between phone calls today at work. And there was like, you know, a pretty lengthy discussion of the foolhardiness of reboots and what it does to retail, and put very succinctly and why it doesn't work. But also, there are a lot of these folks saying, here are better things you can do that'll help all of us. And, you know, nobody's, it's like listening to gun control discussions. It's like, no, we're not going to do that because money.
Yeah. Retailers have been telling Marvel and people who work at Marvel, like, what would be beneficial, and they just don't listen. So there must just not be interested in hearing.
It's short term. It's always been short term.
Yeah.
It will always be short term.
And I don't see how they can reconcile that. The corporate side can reconcile that with the money they're making off the films and all that other stuff, and yet the source matter, the books are suffering, and the creators and the publishers are suffering, and the retailers are suffering, and you know, the doomsayers have been saying this since the rise of digital communication, that that's going to kill print and comics and blah blah blah. But you know, also, this country has been leaning towards, you know, any intellectualism for quite some time. And believe it or not, that's killing comic books, too. Because when I was researching the EC episode, there was that weird schism. It's like, is it lowbrow? Is it highbrow? Is it both? Well, I'll tell you this much. It makes people nervous, and things that make people nervous don't always sell.
And the episode you can watch on the Panel Jumper YouTube channel.
Of course,
right?
You can, and learn all the things.
Just in case someone's brand new to our podcast, I just want to make sure we don't gloss over that.
But also, kind of related, but you know, Barnes and Noble just announced like early this week or last week, they just announced they were laying off scads of people.
They're circling the drain. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, they just was like no forewarning for people who've been employed there at Barnes and Noble for decades. It's like no severance, no nothing. Bye. Thanks. Thanks. You can apply for a part-time position next week. Seriously, they were telling this to their employees.
Wow.
And I get it. I get that stuff is suffering, but you know, I buy so many gosh darn books, I don't have time to read them. I'm tired of doing the work for the rest of you people. Get out, go to your comic book store.
Yes.
All right. Yeah. This rant brought to you by Cole Hornaday. I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot more as the night goes on.
Grumposaurus.
Speaking of Brian Michael Bendis, there's a big article out of Vulture.com where he basically gave, I'm sorry, not Vulture, Forbes, where he gave some details on what his new responsibilities will be at DC. And I'm not going to go through any of the Batman stuff, but the one I do want to bring up is that he's going to be... DC is not going to be the home of Jinx World, which means that it's going to have Bendis's entire creator-owned library, Unix, Power, Scarlet, and more. What does this mean for DC? Does anybody care about... Well, first off, what is Jinx World?
It's like all the stuff that made Bendis a big name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the
he used
key
to
books.
Draw.
Yeah. The first was titled called Jinx, and there's Goldfish, mm-hmm. and there's Torso, and Torso's great.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite series.
Is this stuff popular? Like, is this a get for DC?
No.
Yeah, I can't sell
material.
A copy of any of it to save my life right now.
It introduced the mainstream folks to the quality of his writing and his writing style, which he's stuck with and I kind of admire, but I know for a lot of folks they find it kind of annoying because he's still got that noir-esque patter that he uses, and you see it particularly in the Jessica Jones comic book. Mm-hmm. I like it. I think it's refreshing even after all this time. Other folks think it's annoying. But no, I just thought it's kind of weird because, no, those books have never been rock and roll sellers.
Well, it's one of those things, everybody that cares about Bendis has them already.
Right.
Yeah.
And Bendis has his hardcore followers, but he's not growing too many followers.
Yeah.
And maybe with the move to DC, he might get some new people going that way. So
he might get some, like, I'm a DC person finally discovering his stuff.
I just find it interesting that this was a stipulation of his contract. It's like, yeah, you've got to buy my catalog and help me sell it.
He probably had a garage full of unsold books he was trying to unload.
Well, see, the funny thing is they were published independently first, and mm-hmm. then there's Image, and mm-hmm. then there's the Marvel versions, mm-hmm. and
the Icon
stuff. So I think there's at least 5 or 6 printings per book now, in all sorts of sizes and variations. They made tiny, tiny versions a little while ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like, now we get another one.
Yeah, there's going to be more, because DC is going to be re-releasing it digitally and in print. Mm.
And so this power is going to be incorporated into the DC universe?
It sounded like it.
I said Unix earlier. I misspoke because I confused the parentheses with Jinx. Kerning is important, people. Like, Jinx, Powers, and Scarlet. Scarlet. And there's going to be brand new titles as well.
Yeah. If he can keep up on schedule, that'd be nice. Yeah. I think Scarlet took like a couple years to do like a handful of issues.
Yeah.
And what's the one he never finished? Brilliant.
Yeah.
Oh, Brilliant. That was like 5 or 6 years ago.
Was that
ago.
Like a reality TV, superhero TV show or something?
I can't remember. No, it
I
wasn't
I read the
that.
First issue. And
that was America's
bored.
Got Powers, I think.
Yes.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. Was that?
That's
was,
not Bendis.
That was, okay.
Yeah, that was a
It came
hitch.
Out the same time.
Yeah, kind of, sort of. It's they all have these weird timelines now that don't make any sense because I think Brilliant had like 2 years between issues in many cases. But no, I don't think it's much of a get for DC. I mean, it doesn't hurt to expand your catalog, but
I think this is just an opportunity for him to sell his books and and heighten the profile of his personal brand, but which I kind of admire. I think that's pretty smart.
Yeah, that's a very smart, savvy move.
And yeah,
it's different.
He's also going to be overseeing his own pop-up imprint at DC. Not a lot of details available yet, but with all of his Superman and Action Comics duties, how does he find the time?
Yeah. I just kind of wish the new imprint was just called like Oiga Vault or something like that. Yiddish imprint. Because all his characters, all of them, even if it's Galactus, has to suddenly start sounding like an 80-year-old Yiddish woman.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Speaking of DC, Action Comics number 1000 is quickly approaching us, and there's gonna be a different type of Action Comics 1000 that you schooled me on earlier, because I read this story that it's gonna be like this big giant book. It's gonna contain all these different stories, but no, it's a different.
So there's
like a hardcover.
Yeah, there's two things with the title Action 1000, and there's the actual Action number 1000, which will be like an $8. Big thick comic book. I think it's 80 pages, and that Bendis will have a story in. And then there's going to be a 350 something page hardcover that will feature a never before printed story by Schuster and Siegel, and a bunch of other reprints and some other stuff in there. It's like a best of kind of compilation. Yeah. So the unprinted material is what's fascinating. And I was just reading somewhere that apparently many, many, many years ago when DC used to have tours, they would hand out just like some random artwork to people at times. And so Marv Wolfman, when he was just a young child, went there and he got this and like this original Schuster story or something, and he kept it in He just kept it, and now it's like, here. And it's just like, what?
That seems widely irresponsible by DC to just hand that stuff out.
Like so all the time. I want to read more about that instead of the actual story, but because that's just fascinating. Like, what else do you guys just hand off? Well, here's the long-lost page of Bernie Wrights and Swamp Thing.
I don't know. Seriously.
Or Rick Veitch's Swamp Thing, for that matter. So do you know any more details? Like, how long is the story? Was it?
I don't know offhand.
One or two pages?
I kind of browse through that. Okay. I imagine it's maybe like a 4 or 5 page thing. Wow. But it's fascinating that we get a new old Schuster Siegel story.
This is interesting because it says it could include a never before published 12-page story from original Superman writer Jerry Siegel with art by the Joe Schuster Studio. Not an original Siegel Schuster, but it's the Siegel Schuster Studio.
Jerry Siegel. Remember, Jerry Siegel came back even after they'd been filing lawsuits to the rights of to get Superman to get the rights of Superman back, and he came back and he worked at DC in a staff writer capacity, and then he actually wound up at Marvel doing copy editing toward the end of his life. These guys were not heroes. They were not rock stars. And DC did their ever best to make people forget who they were.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So going back to the two different versions, there's a, like you said, an 80-page version for $10. The $384-page hardcover is going to have a price of $29.99, which seems kind of reasonable.
Yeah, that's pretty reasonable. Can you scroll back up? Because that Marv Wolfman pit was right there. Can you read that real quick?
Yeah, so the Found Siegel and Schuster story is a true treasure with a fascinating backstory. Back when DC did regular tours of the New York office, it was common for fans to get original art that would have been otherwise disposed of as a tour souvenir. So they just threw away original art, apparently, in D.C. As a young fan on a tour, Marv Wolfman found this Superman story and kept it all these years. It's incredible to think that Marv not only rescued this unpublished story, he then went on to become one of D.C.'s most prolific writers. And Wolfman shared this story with D.C. To publish as part of this special new collection. Honestly, since he was one of DC's most prolific writers, I'm surprised he held on to it this long.
Yeah.
You would think that he would pull this out during his job interview for DC.
Yeah.
Hire me. I got cred here because I've been reading.
I hold this hostage.
Exactly. Yes.
It just makes you sad because million-dollar pieces of art, just like, here, go, kid, take it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, there's that. There's having that insurance. But also, he may have been holding on to it because he knew that the Siegel and Schuster estate weren't going to have any money until very recently.
Yeah.
All that. You know, they finally started to settle all that stuff, thought it was to the advantage of Siegel and Schuster.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Cool. Mm-hmm. All right, I went to the movies this weekend. We'll talk about that later. But
what?
One of the trailers I saw was for Solo. Have y'all seen this trailer for Han?
Yeah, I keep doing the same thing you're doing.
Yeah, Solo. I was thinking of the idiot from Marvel.
Yes, that's what I keep doing. I'm like, he's got a movie? Yeah. Jeez.
No, it's the Star Wars story with some rando actor is playing Han Solo. I don't know his name.
Some rando Lando?
Probably learned. and some rando Lando. No, that's actually Donald Glover.
Some rando Lando.
He's got one charming smile trailer.
Watching the trailer, I'm like, I don't want to watch somebody try and be Harrison Ford. I want to see the story of young Lando Calrissian.
Yeah.
And frankly, I've been looking through the toys and the action figures because those are the best spoilers, you know? And because the Millennium Falcon looks entirely different.
Mm-hmm.
It's all sweet and new and got blue highlights. And the little gap that's, you know, you always see in the version that we know in the nose cone section is... there's something in there, there's something that fits in there, and it's like a complete shape, and it's really fascinating. But the action figure of Lando is the coolest.
Yeah, it's captured pretty
colorful,
well.
Colorful, and but those are the 6-inch figures that I refuse to buy.
He's got such a great look on his face on that figure.
But I don't understand why he's been omitted from the new movies, and I'm like, let's tell, you know what, we need... this should be a story about Lando, as far as I'm concerned, and I hope they put emphasis on his character in this and not
I'm
far more interested in learning more about him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't feel like we need to know where Solo has been.
No, we don't need
necessarily.
Any of that
we don't
stuff.
Need any of it. It's all filler. So if we get something else that might actually be more entertaining and
precisely
still keep, like, yeah, he was a smuggler. Okay, great.
Yeah, we know you. Cool. You won the Kessel Run in 13 parsecs. We know this. Why do you? You know, it's like Doomsday Clock. Yeah, we know.
See, I prefer this if this was David Walken playing that role.
Oh. Really?
Did you ever see the Saturday Night Live where they had the outtakes for different actors trying to be Han Solo?
No.
And somebody was being, what if Christopher Walken was him? He's like,
oh,
Kessel Run, 13 parsecs. You know? So.
Fascinating.
Sorry, not Doomsday Clock, the Watchmen prequels. It's like, we already know all this one.
Yeah.
All right, sorry. Had to complete that. All right.
So anyway.
I feel complete without it.
Anyway, Solo's coming out. I'm going to go see it because I've seen all the Star Wars movies.
May is a very busy month, so if something's going to fall off for me, the Solo movie might. Yeah, because I'm going to see Deadpool. Sorry, Cole. And I'm going to see Infinity War. Those both are things that are on.
Just remember, where Deadpool's concerned, you're not going to be able to get that time back.
I know. I'm investing in that time right with ridiculousness. Yeah.
Life is precious. Time is precious.
Trust, I know. Let's move on.
Consciousness is precious.
It's so precious. Let's move on.
Moving on. IDW is releasing a brand new edition. I wrote edition on the show notes. I apologize for that. My grammar was incorrect, but it was just a typo. A brand new edition of Shelley Bond's Femme Magnifique, which was originally kickstarted, which raised nearly $100,000. It was an anthology of biographies of notable women in history. So IDW is giving it a soft cover edition available this September. Mm-hmm. Notables include Octavia Butler, Michelle Obama, Erskine Lagan, who passed away recently, Sally Ride, Harriet Tubman, and more.
Wow, so that's an eclectic mix of individuals right there.
Yeah. So, look for that. I just put it in there because I'm like, I wanted stories that wasn't Marvel or DC.
Yes. and it's pretty cool looking, too. There's some great artists attached to it.
Has that been offered through our previews catalog yet?
Not yet.
Okay, I haven't seen it, but I know people. It's on people's radar now because it's been announced. So,
now is this part of her new imprint, or is this something?
It's being.
It was Kickstarter.
It is. Yes, it is being.
Black Crown.
Through Black Crown.
Thank you. I can't remember the name of it because I got so mad over at them. I got so mad at her. So.
At her? What, did she kick your dog or something?
No, it was that quarterly one that...
No, it was the preview thing that you had to pay $7 for that had nothing in it.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That was a book report from many, many eons ago.
No, it was a supplemental. I wasn't going to devote a book report to it. I was just going to scream about it.
That was one of your cheaty, like, yeah, I would get two reviews
totally
in
cheaty.
One.
It was like, I got this I'm mad about, guys. I need to spew.
I remember that. Anyway, the new paperback edition
of... Everything
out of
my mouth is so memorable.
The new paperback edition of Femme Magnifique goes on sale September 4th, so later on this year.
Yeah.
And finally today, some sad news. Local Seattle area artist Mark Campos has tragically passed away. He was beloved by many friends of the show, David Lasky and Tatiana Gill, who have been posting rather poignant and touching things about him on social media. Can anybody tell me who Mark was and what he did?
I never actually met him, so I'm only aware of his work. We've carried a few things of his in the past, but we've got, like, right now, Moxie My Sweet, which is a collection of stories illustrated by, like, David Lasky and Tatiana Gill. And I did watch a brief interview with him that I found a few nights back, where they just kind of asked him different questions about his experiences getting books out there and working with different people and stuff like that. So he just seemed like a really great talent who... left too soon.
Yeah, and the it appears to me that the Seattle comic artist community is a pretty tight-knit community, and so losing one of their own really rippled throughout the creators in town.
What's interesting is that did he not draw DC superhero comics in the 90s? I think he drew some Justice Leagues and things like that, which I thought was really interesting that he also is this zine-type storyteller. And does these really exceptional, crazy, witty, insightful, or did these crazy, witty, insightful strips and single panel things. But he also, took took a swing at doing mainstream comics and mainstream superheroes.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't see any of that, so that's cool.
Yeah, I was looking up his stuff, and you know, the that period in the 90s where you know, bike pants Wonder Woman, you know. Bike shorts Wonder Woman, remember that period?
Yeah. Denim vest Wonder Woman.
Yes. Yeah. He was drawing that period.
Cool. All right. Rest in peace, Mark Campos. Let's move on to Book Report, everybody. Sorry you have to follow that. And let's start with Chris. What do you got?
Which do I want to talk about right now? I will talk about Kuma Miko, Girl Meets Bear. It is the first volume from One Piece Books, written by Masume Yoshimoto. And it's about this young girl who is a priestess in a shrine for this small village in the mountains, and her relationship with a talking bear. And there's this backstory of this ancient myth of the gods of the mountain forced this maiden to marry a bear, but she actually kind of fell in love with the bear, and the bear fell in love with her, and they had babies. And it jumps to the current time, and apparently that the people of the village cut a deal with the bears to live in peace, so everybody just hangs out with talking bears. And so this one bear is very attached to this young girl who's the priestess and has kind of helped raise her, and she is tired of being a country bumpkin and wants to move to the city, and he's just like, no, you will not do that, you're too innocent. And so he's kind of he wants to maintain the relationship and the friendship, and it's very sweet and very, very cute. And there's not really like much of a plot beyond that. It's just like this daily life of them hanging out with the bear and him being kind of funny and silly, and like giving her tests to prove why she can't go to the city and stuff like that. So and it ends with a 2-page special teaching you to all those who want to cuddle a big bear, a cuddle comic to end the volume.
Aww.
And it's all about how to, you know, how to properly groom a bear and all that. So it's pretty adorable. It's a lot of fluff. There's not too much deep meaning or plotting in this. But sometimes
you just want fluff.
You really just need fluff, and a fluffy bear goes a long way. So yeah, for $11.95, it's a good, cute story. There's like 6 volumes already. Mm. They offered them all at once, so I of course had to order them all at once from the store. So we got a big roll of cute bears on the wall, and yeah, highly recommend it. It's a lot of fun.
Excellent. Kuma Miko. Thank you, Chris. Yeah. Nicole, what do you got for us this week?
So something that came out last week is a new Vertigo title called Deathbed, and it's written by Joshua Williamson. Art is by Riley Rossmo, who I really like. He did a series called Green Wake with Image that I got into when I first started working here and kind of have followed him ever since. And there's colors by Ivan Placencia. It follows this one girl, this woman, who has been mostly just a ghostwriter for people's lives, and she's never really made much personal success, and her agent is kind of on his last whatever the idiom is. He's on his
last leg,
yeah, last whatever you want to do. And he's like, you pretty much need to take this deal that I'm giving you to do ghostwriting for another human, or, you know, we're gonna maybe cut you. And so she goes to this big mansion. It's like super Victorian style. Goes in there, and there's a guy in there who is in a huge bed, gray hair and everything, and he's got people around him, and he like ushers everybody out, and he's talking to her about everything, and turns out that it's not what you think it is. Like, he's supposed to be on his deathbed, and he's like, you know, I want you to write my story, but then it just takes a total different spin there's monsters, there's all sorts of things. Like, if you've ever read Shudder and the kind of adventure and action of all of a sudden, like, this woman who used to be an adventurer, all of a sudden, like, all these people are coming after her, it's kind of got that same sort of bent. And it sounds like it's going to be a really fun, adventurous romp with this guy and through the eyes of this woman who's the ghostwriter. So it was a really fun first issue. I really enjoyed it. I'm curious to see where it's going to go. I like Riley Rossmo's art, as I've said. And I think he's drawing like a different kind of like woman too. Like, she's very curvy. So I think it's a pretty cool story. I think I gave you at least a synopsis without like ruining everything.
Oh, there you go.
I want to do a teaser, but no, I was spoilers. Like, I want to start play by play. And then I'm like, Nicole, don't do everything. Just because you liked a thing. Anyway, so I would recommend Deathbed by Joshua Williamson and Riley Rossmo.
Cool. Great. Yeah. Thanks, Nicole. Mm-hmm. And finally, Cole Hornaday, what do you got for us?
Well, I read Dark Knight, N-I-G-T-H, A True Story by Paul Dini and Eduardo Risso. And this is actually published, I think, over a year ago. Let me double check here, through DC Comics, but it was published, 2016, but it was published as part of the Vertigo line because it's a true life story that involves Batman characters, but is actually the story of Paul Dini and a tragic experience he had, and I don't know if you recognize his name, but Mr. Dini was one of the lead writers for the Batman animated series, and I think he went on to write maybe the Warner Superman series and perhaps Justice League as well. But so this is the story of it starts one night decades ago, because he's actually working on the script for Mask of the Phantasm, which I think came out in the early 90s. So he is coming home from a date, and two men mug him and brutally beat him and smash his face in. And so the book is his... It shares with you his recovery process of getting through that tragedy and getting past the trauma and sort of trying to reconfigure and reconcile his life. It's really hard to read, and it's beautifully drawn by Risso, who I think is one of the most talented illustrators of our day. Even his science fiction stories still look like a noir detective tale. And what happens in this is that as Dini is working on his recovery process or struggling to reconcile what has happened to him, the Batman characters, including Batman, all of the villains, the Rogues Gallery, they all are talking to him. So they become sort of, in this story, the mouthpiece for his process. What is very difficult for me in this is that there is no... you feel his pain, you feel his confusion, but... he, in the course of this story, as far as I'm concerned, does not come out the other side. There's no transcendence for him. And after a certain point, it's really hard to read because he's just repeating the trauma in a different discussion. He's using a different Batman character as a different mouthpiece. And there's a lot of loathing of women in this story. And that I found the most difficult to deal with. Whether he's going to admit it or not, I'm reading it. The reason he gets beat up is that he goes out on a date with a starlet who has, you know, kept him in the friend zone, and he's very resentful of that. And he's walking down the street with his hands in his pockets, and these guys come out of the dark and they beat the crap out of him, and they smash his face in. And he repeatedly has these. He still goes back to stories about women rejecting him, not finding fulfilling relationships. And one of the things that was most difficult for me to read is he goes back and he visits his psychologist, and the way the psychologist is depicted is particularly problematic because she looks like a noir detective vamp or femme fatale with a push-up bra and an open blouse and long legs and a high skirt. And I'm like, I'm not sure, sir, how we're supposed to take what you're going through and what you're telling us when these people who are there to be help you and be your caretakers or at least guide you, you're depicting them in this way. And when we get to the end of the story and he kind of does a look back over his life, he mentions that he's married. He mentions that things are going okay, but he still deals with the trauma. But he doesn't talk about that relationship. And he doesn't talk about, I don't get any transcendence from this story. And I think when I have reread parts of it again and again, trying to figure out what's bothering me about it, and I think I have to say that this is a story where someone is actually demanding my sympathy. And you're not going to get sympathy from me when you demand it in this way. I'm not sure why the story needed to be told. I'm not sure why he needed to tell it, because I don't believe he's come through the other end of the tunnel yet. I think he's still in the dark.
That could be why he wanted to do it.
Okay, fair enough. But, fair enough. And the story's going to be good for people who are in that place. Right. So I get that. But, so you can understand why I have trouble with it.
Yeah, totally, totally.
Because I don't feel like there's any growth for him. I hope he's still growing. But his story left me where he's at with it, in the tunnel. And that was hard for me to read. It was very hard for me to read.
Not all stories have a resolution.
No, they don't. But, you know, I am just so much in need of a button on the end of everything. Like I said, it's beautiful. He is a talented man. The guy lives the nerd dream as far as I'm concerned. You know, and that's the other thing that's just bugging me is, like, he's talking about going to work and writing Batman and then going buying these high-end collectibles. And I'm like, you are blessed, Turkey. You are blessed. I met him once very briefly at a comic book convention and really wanted to talk to him, and he really was not interested in talking to me. And I think it was actually after this happened. So,
All right, cool. Thank you, Cole.
You bet.
Dark Knight, a true Batman story. Well, that is Book Report, and that is our show. And coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, as well as the Comic Extension here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comextension.com. Find us on iTunes or however you get your podcasts at perfectboundpodcast.com. We're also on TuneIn these days. If you tune in,
yes,
tune in
job,
to
Ben
the Perfect Bound podcast. Send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. And now, friends, it's quiz time. Get your quiz hats on. This time, the questions come to us from me.
What?
I know, right? All right, here we go. Something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue. Beetle, yes, it's
Yay!
A quiz time about weddings and comics. Who knew? President's Day Eve is a hotbed of wedding activity, but apparently it is, as Facebook showed me pictures from 3 different weddings occurring that day, none of which I was invited to, but Lord knows I love me some free cake and an open bar. Here are 5 questions about weddings that have happened between the pages of our funny books.
Yay.
And this is stolen almost word from an article at comicsalliance.com, so please forgive me, but this is almost a bit of straight-up plagiarism. I will freely admit that. All right, number 1. These two tied the knot in New Avengers number 1 in a ceremony that, since it was written by Brian Michael Bendis, took about 18 hours to get through.
Was it Luke Cage and Jessica Jones?
It was Luke Cage and Jessica Jones. In fact, we heard it moved Iron Fist to tears, but that might just have been because he was left out of his best friend's wedding party.
Oh,
number 2. The status of Batman and this woman's wedding in Batman's Son of the Demon is a little complicated, since it was in continuity, then not in continuity, then sort of in continuity when Batman's son Damian showed up, courtesy of Grant Morrison.
Talia
al Ghul. The ceremony itself is pretty simple. Ra's al Ghul said they were married. Talia said okay, and we moved on to some crowd-pleasing shirtless Batman action.
Yeah.
But don't was forget. There a banana?
No banana.
Oh, the banana!
He had to extract Bruce's DNA.
All right, number 3.
Is that what they call it these days?
Number 3. She's usually portrayed as being a younger, hotter version of Wonder Woman, and he's a creepy ex-college professor in a dead-end job who spent most of his time hitting on all her creepy friends and quoting Saturday Night Live. Yet they got hitched in Tales of the Teen Titans number 50.
Donna Troy and I can't remember his
big
name.
Big poofy hair guy.
But that was so 80s.
I'll give you the Donna Troy part.
Terry something.
You're on the right track.
Terry Long.
Okay, truly, yeah. Love is blind, yeah, and deaf and stupid.
Yes.
All right.
You know, he was sweet and quaint back in the day.
Number four. The wedding between these two had one of the more embarrassing ends when the groom sold his marriage to the devil to save his octogenarian aunt as part of the One More Day storyline.
Peter Parker and Mary Jane.
Peter Parker and Mary Jane Watson. It's probably worth noting that the actual wedding is 39 pages of Peter wondering if marrying a supermodel is a terrible mistake before finally getting on with it.
Shut up, yep. Peter.
And finally...
Yep, I think I still have that, too.
This wedding set the gold standard for every comic book wedding that came after, including appearances by not only almost every Marvel superhero, but attacks by Dr. Doom, the Puppet Master, the Red Ghost and his super apes, the Mole Man, the Mandarin, the Black Knight, Kang, the Mad Thinker's awesome android, the Grey Gargoyle, the Super Skrull, Hydra, Cobra, the Executioner, the Enchantress, Mr. Hyde, Electro, the Beetle, Atuma, and believe it or not, the Human Top, plus a cameo by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby themselves.
Did you get Paste Pot Pete in there?
I did not.
Sue and Reed Richards.
It is Sue Storm and Reed Richards. All right, that is quiz time, and that is our show. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.